I was about 14 years old, and I got into an argument with one of my friends, and all that happened was just a basic fight. She slapped me in the face, and I did the same thing back. There was no marks, no witnesses, nothing. It was just her word against my word. My only charges were simple assault and harassment, and I didn't even know that charges were pressed against me until I had to go down to the intake and probation and fill out a whole bunch of paperwork. This makes me really question other authority figures and people that we're supposed to look up to and trust. I mean, Chivarelle has been a judge for a long time from what I know, and a well-respected one is what I thought, and I obviously not. It just really makes me question and not trust other people. I mean, if someone like Judge Chivarelle can do this, then it makes me believe that anyone can betray the law, and I don't know.
Sandy Fonzo confronted former Judge Chivarelle outside the courtroom after his sentencing. Fonzo's son, Edward Kenzikowski, was sentenced by Chivarelle to a youth jail and then a four-month boot camp. Edward committed suicide in June of 2010. Confronting Chivarelle, Sandy Fonzo blamed the judge for her son's death.
My kid's not here! He's dead! Because of him! He ruined my f-
Hey, Tom, how much jail time do you think a person could get for throwing a steak?
A steak? You mean like vampire steak or delicious food steak?
The food, like a nice ribeye or a New York strip.
I'll go for filet mignon personally, but I don't think you'd get any jail time for that, not unless you injured somebody seriously with the steak.
I would agree. But what if I told you there was a teenager from Pennsylvania who was detained for almost 2 months for the crime of throwing meat?
I honestly wouldn't believe you because that just sounds too absurd to be true.
Well, it's true. Let's go back in time to Luzerne County, Pennsylvania. The year is 2004, and 13-year-old seventh grader Matthew is in his kitchen arguing with his mom's boyfriend, as most teenagers will. Things get heated, and supposedly, Matthew ends up throwing a piece of beef.
Okay.
No one gets injured. So to your point,
right,
it's like a harmless crime. But for some reason, Matthew's mom calls the cops, and she has assault charges filed against her own son. About a month later, Matthew finds himself on trial, standing in a courtroom before a menacing judge. The judge's name is Mark Ciavarella. He's about 54 years old, and he's got a reputation for being tough on crime. Matthew's scared, but his lawyers assured him that if he's found guilty, his punishment will be light. He's a good kid. He doesn't have any priors. During the trial, Judge Ciavarella glares down at Matthew and asks if he threw the steak. Matthew says no and tries to explain, but before he can even finish his sentence, the judge yells, "Remanded!" And all of a sudden, Matthew gets shackled and dragged out of the room.
Unbelievable.
That same day, he's booked at Pennsylvania Child Care, which, get this, is a private, for-profit juvenile detention facility.
Called PA Child Care.
Yes, and that plays a key role in today's story. And of course, this story's over the top and completely surreal. Over the next 7 weeks, Matthew spends his days being treated like an animal. When he's not in class, he's confined to his room. He's forbidden from laying on his bed during the day, and instead has to sit upright on a hard, backless stool. I would have hoped that Matthew's story is an anomaly, some sort of bizarre and rare failing in the system, but unfortunately, Matthew is just one of thousands of Pennsylvania's kids serving cruel sentences for petty crimes, and all because a couple of corrupt judges wanted to get rich.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tax Crime Junkies. I'm your co-host, Tom Gorzinski. I'm an enrolled agent. I'm admitted to practice before the U.S. Tax Court as a non-attorney. I'm a tax instructor, a tax planner, and I have a real interest in tax crime. With me today is my co-host, Dominique Molina.
Hey, I'm Dominique Molina, a CPA certified tax strategist. I have a degree in law, and I lead the American Institute of Certified Tax Planners. I also have an interest in true crime. So together, Tom and I decided to create a true crime podcast that combines our love of mysteries, whodunits, and tax. We are the Tax Crime Junkies.
And this week, we bring you a two-parter about the infamous Kids for Cash scandal that happened in the early 2000s. The story follows Mark Ciavarella and Michael Conahan, two crooked Pennsylvania judges who received illegal kickbacks for sentencing juvenile offenders to detention facilities that they had a financial interest in.
That's two words you don't hear very often, crooked and judge.
No.
In the same sentence. It's one of the most unethical things I've ever heard. And heads up, this topic is heavy. We're going to be discussing some heartbreaking and downright abusive situations that minors were in due to the actions of Ciavarella and Conahan. So please be advised and listen with care.
And with that, let's get into the story. So to understand how Mark Ciavarella became so cruel that he sent a child to prison without a fair trial, we have to go back to 1995. Ciavarella is in his mid-40s, and he's running to become a county judge. So he releases a campaign ad. In it, he tells his constituents that murders by teens age 14 to 17 rose 165%. As he walks towards the camera, he declares in no uncertain terms what he'll do to juvenile offenders.
As judge, if given the opportunity to try a juvenile offender as an adult, I will. If you're a teen and convicted of murder, rape, or violent crimes against our children or the elderly, you can expect that I will impose the maximum sentence allowed by law.
Mark Ciavarella, a judge to protect all of us.
It sounds harsh, but the citizens are actually on board, and he wins. He's elected for a 10-year term. I don't know how I feel really about judges being elected. Most people don't take the time to research the judge.
Not a fan of that system personally.
And 10 years is a long time.
Yes.
So it truly seems in this story like Ciavarella believes that severe discipline is what's best for these kids. There's a documentary titled Kids for Cash. And in that, Ciavarella describes a time when he was a teen who got into trouble with the law. One night, he was out underage drinking with a group of friends when one of the friends decides to steal a stranger's car and go for a joyride. But Ciavarella gets caught. The officer doesn't arrest him, though. Instead, he drives him home to his parents. His mother's distraught and his father is furious. He's so furious that he winds up for a punch and knocks Ciavarella out cold.
Now, instead of being upset by this memory, as many people would be, he actually cites it as a good example of how to raise kids. This abusive form of discipline is actually how he wants to preside as a judge. He considers it loving and caring. And just to show how loving and caring he is, Ciavarella takes a trip to the county's juvenile facility. He wants to make sure the place he's sending delinquents to is in good condition.
And when he gets there, he's actually horrified. The detention center is old. It was built back in 1937, and it looks exactly as you might picture a building that old to be. Paint is peeling off the walls, the pipes are leaking, and there's an issue with heat. Place is crawling with vermin like roaches and rats. Ooh, and the smell is unbearable. Ciavarella knows this place is unacceptable, especially when you're talking about minors.
So Ciavarella pays a visit to Thomas Makowski, a county commissioner. As one of three commissioners, he is responsible for adopting budgets and approving land use and financial decisions. Ciavarella describes the terrible conditions at the juvenile facility. Makowski says the county has made repairs to the building over the years, and the state keeps approving it for use, even in that terrible condition. But Ciavarella doesn't think that's good enough. He asks Makowski if the county can build a brand new facility. Now, Makowski says he'll discuss it with the rest of the commissioners.
And I have to say, as you'll learn in this episode, Ciavarella really didn't care what the conditions were
for
minor children. So Makowski does. He goes and asks with the rest of the commissioners. And over the next couple of years, along with other county officials, Makowski considers lots of different options. He looks into the difference between purchasing or leasing a building that's been previously built. He compares it to the cost of building a new one themselves, but anyone who's been to the DMV knows that government-backed projects take a long time. But the state of the juvenile detention center is dire, so Ciavarella does what he can to move things along much more quickly.
So around 1998 or 1999, Ciavarella seeks the advice of Judge Michael Conahan. Conahan's in his late 40s. Now, he's on track to become the president judge of Lucerne County, which is a relatively high position. He's also, get this, Dominique, a savvy businessman. Ciavarella tells him about the hard conditions of the detention center and complains about how the county is dragging their feet on replacing it. Ciavarella wants Conahan's take. If the county decides that constructing a new facility would be too expensive, could they build a center that not just serves Lucerne County, but the surrounding areas as well? Conahan thinks that's not a bad idea, but still, government projects take a long time. If Ciavarella wants a new facility and fast, he's going to have to go private sector. Conahan says he'll reach out to some quote-unquote business connections to see who might want to go in on this lucrative opportunity.
Because they're going to have to raise investment capital.
A lot of capital.
To do this. Conahan himself actually pitches some colleagues, and he ends up recruiting a man named Robert Powell. Powell is a local attorney, so no surprise there. Judges, no attorney.
Right.
And this guy's got a thriving personal injury practice. He also has experience in land development. So Powell signs on to become the owner and manager of the new detention center, which he names PA Child Care. And he also invests a good chunk of his own money. The next step is to find a builder. But that's easy. Ciavarella is very close with one. He has all the answers, doesn't he? His name is Robert Miracle, and Miracle agrees to build the property. He scouts locations, he chooses the best one, and he starts putting together a building plan. This is where the corruption begins.
So now it's 2001, a couple of years after the project started to take shape. Miracle is thrilled to have won Powell's business. And since Ciavarella and Conahan made it happen, Miracle wants to offer them a finder's fee of just under $1 million.
Sounds like a good deal.
Right. It'll be paid out at once. All the funding is in place. A finder's fee is a type of commission paid to someone, of course, who brings in business. Now, it's common practice in the real estate world. Private business associates often accept finder's fees for helping others obtain work or clients in their field. But government officials, like judges, have to abide by a totally different set of standards, as I'm sure we all would expect. It's extremely unethical, even illegal, for judges to accept these types of payments, especially when the payments are related to something they have a vested interest in. Being that Ciavarella and Conahan are esteemed judges, you would think they know this, right? They should know the ethical rules of their profession. Do they say no? No, they take the payout. And they later claim they had no idea it was wrong.
We're actually seeing this come to the forefront right now with the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And although I was surprised to learn that it doesn't appear that there are these same types of ethics laws in place for our Supreme Court, but definitely in Pennsylvania, they've got an issue here. And there's also a slight problem with PA childcare. Powell's having trouble getting it fully funded. The banks don't want to back the venture because it's risky. They want to see something that will prove the detention center's profitability. And Powell's worried. The court documents suggest that Ciavarella and Conahan are worried too. All three men have a lot riding on this. Powell put in his own money, and Ciavarella and Conahan have about $1 million in finder's fees on the line. So they're not going to get that money if PA childcare falls through. And according to court documents, Conahan tells Powell that when he becomes president judge, he'll sign an agreement guaranteeing the placement of juveniles at PA childcare, along with an annual lease payment. But there's a catch. Apparently, Conahan also told Powell that Ciavarella is going to need to get something more out of all this, probably because he's the one who actually is in charge of sentencing children that are going to go to stay at PA child care. And so you can see the discrepancy here and the problem. They're motivated. They're going to be rewarded financially
for their sentencing decisions.
Absolutely.
And of course, this is highly unethical. It could get them disbarred or even worse. But in January 2002, Conahan in fact becomes president judge. And as promised, he signs an agreement to send the county juveniles to PA child care once it's built, and also guarantees that Luzerne County will pay an annual fee of, get this, $1.3 million a year for 20 years.
Which is interesting on its own, because typically when you have a business, in this case, a private business for profit, is starting a detention center, they should be the ones paying rent to the owner of the building. Remember, the government doesn't own the building.
Right.
So why is the government guaranteeing a rental payment to the detention center?
Well, it's because it's exactly what the banks needed to give the money to Powell.
Ah.
So it cemented the whole deal. PA childcare is now officially a go. A couple of months later, construction begins, but Conahan does even more to ensure PA childcare's success. He advises the county commissioners there won't be any money in the budget to run the old center, which means they have to lay those employees off. Mm. So in December of 2002, the court turns in their license for operating the detention center, and they officially stop sending juveniles there on December 31st.
Well, I guess you could see that coming. But basically, Conahan's doing everything in his power just to make sure that PA childcare is the most appealing option for juvie. Remember, he and Ciavarella are on the verge of a massive payday. It starts with $1 million.
Now, meanwhile, Makowski and the other commissioners, they're scrambling. Where do they place the youth that are now in the inoperable old detention center? So they consider using a wing of the county nursing home, but that goes against the requirements of the law. They also consider building a new facility on the property, but that would require rezoning.
Wow. So it's quite a mess, and it's already in play here,
right,
basically. So when we look at early 2003, PA childcare is so close to being up and running. Things are looking good for both Powell, Conahan, and Ciavarella, but they're not looking so good for the county commissioners. They've got limited options for a detention center, just one, in fact. And the county commissioners approve a handful of expensive, privately run facilities so that they can send juvenile offenders into those facilities. One of them is PA Child Care. Now, for the record, Makowski later testifies that he had no idea Conahan and Ciavarella were involved with PA Child Care. And if he had known, he says he never would have approved the facility. Obviously, that's a major conflict of interest. In any event, PA Child Care negotiates a pretty steep rate with Lucerne County. They're going to get paid $268 per juvenile per day.
Wow.
That's a lot of moolah.
It is. It's going to make them a lot of money, I guess, because of this.
Depends on how many juveniles they have stay, I imagine.
Well, something tells me if the judge who makes the money off of it can sentence people, I can see where this is going, right?
Yes.
Well, fast forward to February of 2003. PA Child Care, the facility everybody has wanted for a long time, opens for business. And Mark Ciavarella gets busy. He gets right to work, making sure the facility stays filled.
I'll bet he does.
His zero tolerance policy is expanded. He orders the juvenile probation officers to hand out violations for even the most small technical violations. In Ciavarella's world, anyone who violates probation can be expected to be sent away until they're 21 years old. And of course, Ciavarella continues to hand out swift and unfair sentences to nonviolent kids who are first-time offenders, just like he did with Matthew, the 13-year-old who threw the stake.
And now that makes sense why he had such a harsh punishment.
Right.
And was remanded because the judge actually had a financial incentive to do so. Let's talk about another example. There's 17-year-old Ed. His parents know their son has a problem with underage drinking, like a lot of teenagers, and they ask a couple of police officers who are friends of theirs, and they're thinking that if the police show up to where Ed's partying, he's going to get scared straight.
Right.
But instead, his mom says that they planted a pipe in his vehicle.
What?
And take Ed into custody. So Ed has a trial, and Ciavarella sends him to the detention center so that he can sit and think about what he's done. That sounds like a parent sending a little kid to their room. And Ed ends up being there for about a year. So 365 times 268.
Right.
Ed's mom says he went in a free-spirited kid and came out a hardened man.
That is disgusting. Now, when Ciavarella isn't chastising kids from the bench, he and Conahan are scheming on how to collect their finder's fee without raising the public's suspicion. According to court documents, the two judges approach Powell and tell him that Miracle is going to make it look like the sum of the finder's fees is being paid to him and some other attorney named Robert Mata.
And see, this is the start of the behavior to me.
To hide and obfuscate what's really going on.
Yes, but it shows this consciousness of guilt.
Yes.
So the claim, of course, later is, well, we didn't know there were actual laws that we're breaking.
Then why are there middlemen involved?
Right. Why don't you just receive this money?
Right.
So Miracle, as requested, sends $387,000 to Powell and another $610,000 to Mata. The judges tell Powell to hold on to the $387,000 until they call for it, and they tell Mata to wire the $610,000 to a company that Conahan owns called Beverage Marketing of Pennsylvania. Only this has nothing to do with beverages.
No.
It's from the beverage marketing account that Ciavarella is issued three separate checks that make up a portion of his finder's fee. Now, here's what I want to know, Tom. If Conahan and Ciavarella didn't know this was wrong, why are they trying to hide it?
Great question, because we all know Ciavarella is definitely trying to hide it. Not only does he go along with the plan to conceal the fee, but Ciavarella also fails to claim this money on his statement of financial interest.
There you go.
Every year, Pennsylvania judges are supposed to report real estate they own, creditors, direct and indirect sources of income, honoraria, and gifts received by them, their spouses, and their children for the calendar year. And this makes sense, right? Judges should disclose if they have financial conflicts of interest in the activities under their purview.
And that way, people like the city commissioners can make responsible fiscal decisions.
Yes.
On behalf of the constituents that they represent.
So when the 2003 statement comes out, the year PA Childcare opened, he doesn't indicate any earnings from the deal.
Of course.
Completely
not.
Omitted. The only thing he puts on that form is his salary from as a judge.
Well, I imagine he also did not report it on his taxes. And that's where we come in and join the story, because he has to hide it everywhere,
right,
to be consistent. And so basically, Ciavarella's a complete hypocrite. He's behaving far worse than the teens in his courtroom, all while he's acting high and mighty, handing out punishments like candy, because each one he has a financial interest in. He's also completely violating the trust of the taxpayers who elected him. There is just no excuse for his actions.
It's truly disgusting, Dominique. And over the next few years, a barrage of kids and parents are completely blindsided by Ciavarella's version of juvenile justice. There's Charlie, a 14-year-old who was outside riding his moped. It was a gift from his parents. They bought it secondhand. Little did they know that moped had been reported as stolen. Charlie shows up for his trial. He doesn't think anything's going to happen to him. But when he stands in front of the judge, Ciavarella calls him troubled and tells his mom she's lost control of him.
Jeez.
Charlie is sentenced to 90 days at boot camp. Guess how long the trial lasted for? 90 seconds.
90 seconds?
A minute and a half.
That's not even enough to explain that the thing was stolen.
Charlie never got to defend himself at this purported trial.
Mm.
There's also Amanda, an eighth grader, who is being bullied by a former friend. One day, she decides she had enough. She throws a volleyball, and there's a fight between the two. Amanda spends almost, you're not going to believe this, 6 years.
Wow.
In the system for a fight.
Wow.
They happen every day. Suspensions? Common consequence. 6 years in juvie, unconscionable.
Wow. That's just mind-boggling. And I think what I've learned from this story, Tom, is that juveniles actually follow a different set of justice.
Yes.
I am baffled as to how they can have their constitutional rights trampled on like this. A 90-second trial, that's hardly due process for the defendant,
right,
in this case. And of course, the parents are shocked. You send your, 13 or 14-year-old when you're in eighth grade? 6 years? So they're 20 years old when,
right,
you get them back? That's shocking. And many of them were told by court employees that they didn't have to worry about anything, and that they shouldn't even bother hiring a lawyer.
Unbelievable.
After all, These are petty crimes committed by minors with clean records. The usual punishment for that kind of first offense is something like probation or community service, not labor camp or time behind bars. And of course, the parents are distraught and they're helpless because who can you turn to
right.
if you cannot trust the judges? So they're thinking, what the hell is going on?
But there's one determined mom, a mama bear, who takes a stand and she jumps into action. She starts hunting for answers and she doesn't rest until justice is served. That's coming up in part two, where we'll discuss how terrorism charges over a MySpace page began Ciavarella's and Conahan's ultimate downfall.
You go, Mom. Boy,
I love it.
Moms will do anything
they will.
For their kids. So next time, we'll also talk about the great lengths that the judges went through to hide their ever-growing stockpile of dirty money, because it's not just having multiple transfers. It gets way worse. And we're going to go over every juicy detail of their trial.
So be sure to tune in next time. I promise you want to hear part two.
For now, thanks everyone for listening. We're so happy you decided to join us, and we hope you consider subscribing to the show and even share it with some friends who could use a Tax Crime Junkie podcast in their life. Help us spread the word and come back for more.
Please join us again next week as we continue this story about total corruption. Until next time, remember, every crime has a trail that leads to the truth.